Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Hello, Mill Creek View podcast listeners. Last day this week in my studio with producer Steve in Linwood, Washington. Today, back to Tennessee Friday. I have another great guest for you focused on the Evergreen State and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest Jonathan Cho of the Discovery Institute and the Cho Show in studio with me today. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us on Amazon Music or Spotify at Mill Creek View Washington Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the show so you won't miss a single episode. And thank you for listening. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Jonathan Cho. Jonathan Cho is a journalist and a senior fellow with Discovery Institute's Center on Wealth and Poverty, covering homeless issues for its Fix Homelessness Initiative. Prior to joining Discovery, Cho spent several years as one of the lead reporters at KOMO, Como TV, consistently the top-rated television station in Seattle. His in-depth stories on crime and deep-dive investigations into the homeless crisis led to measurable results in the community, including changes in public policy. Cho has more than two decades of experience in TV news behind the scenes and in front of the camera for ABC, NBC, Fox, CBS, and Tribune. He has also been nominated and honored with multiple industry awards, including an Emmy. Cho spent several years teaching classes on emerging media and entrepreneurship to underprivileged youth in inner city Chicago. Cho is a New England native and Boston University Journalism School graduate. Hello, Jonathan. Thank you for coming in the studio with me. It's been a moment. How are you?
Hey, I forgot about all that. So thanks for the reminder, Steve.
It's always nice to be reminded of your past, a little research on you. I read your bio, and it's pretty clear you are a journalist with lots of experience and a reputation as one of a fine one in Seattle. What makes Dow Constantine and his staff on Jay Inslee think you aren't?
Well, I would refer your listeners to my social media or just Google what's happened just in the past few weeks. But long story short, I've been trying to hold public officials accountable at the end of the day. And it's a really interesting time in local Seattle media, especially here in the state of Washington as well, where you have something called the Great Resignation happening, where a lot of these veteran reporters have left the TV stations and the newspapers. And a lot of the newspapers are going away, and the TV stations are outgunned. So as an independent journalist now, I'm essentially a fellow at Discovery Institute, a media fellow, and I'm going to be there for at least another half a year. What I get to do is I get to now try to fill in the gaps that a lot of local journalists are not doing. And again, that's holding public officials accountable. A few weeks ago, the Chinatown International District celebrated after defeating King County Executive Dow Constantine, who was trying to ram through a homeless megaplex, which would essentially have housed hundreds of homeless folks. And that's needed, no doubt. But what the beef was with the Chinatown International District was that Constantine did not consult the community. Again, that's been the biggest issue, right? That's the key. And Constantine allegedly was trying to make it the Chinatown immigrant residents versus the homeless. And they were tired of that narrative. And I reported on that extensively and ferociously. And Dow didn't like it. So I went to a press conference several times. And in each instance, he did not respond. And I confronted him straight up. And I asked him several questions. And the last time I did, I wasn't allowed to go into a press conference that was on the grounds of this potential homeless shelter. And it kind of spiraled into Jay Inslee now. His team will not allow me into any of the press conferences because they're not acknowledging me as a journalist anymore. They consider me associated and affiliated with a think tank, or in their words, an advocacy group. So because of that, they won't let me in.
And they're technically breaking the law, right?
Well, we'll find out because we're looking at all our options at this point.
Good. Well,
because it's important.
Your name will forever be linked with the Proud Boys as much as it is your amazing work on the homeless crisis. What's the story of you and the Proud Boys that Como 4 didn't get when they had to part ways with you?
Well, yeah, this happened 6 months ago, and I want to make it very clear I have no ill will towards Como or any of my colleagues, but it is disappointing that management decided to cave to the far left, quite frankly, the pressure that was mounted after I decided to cover a Proud Boys rally that was peaceful. No incidents, no issues whatsoever. I decided to cover this, I think it was last March or April, it was a rally in Olympia, and we were covering so many stories about the far left and Antifa trashing Seattle, and we weren't going in depth about the Proud Boys. And, you know, for your listeners who may not have the context, many Proud Boys and their associates are, you know, are facing federal charges for the January 6th insurrection. So, look, I just went to Olympia as a journalist, and I wanted to cover a rally objectively. And the reason why I was relevant was that a year prior, an Antifa member shot at one of the Proud Boys. Thank God nobody was hit, but, you know, as a news guy, you want to be there for any of the big stories and also the potential big stories. So your job as a journo is to really anticipate. And I went, nothing happened, and I live tweeted. I want to be very clear. None of my footage or my tweets ended up on air on ABC and Como, but instead, the day after, the far left seized on that as an opportunity, and really my enemies. And I didn't realize this till then, but I've developed quite a following of fans, but also enemies who don't like my work because I'm spotlighting the truth and showing the raw realities, and also, frankly, not showing the narrative that they want out there. And I did, and they came after me, and they started an online campaign to get me fired, and they mobilized dozens of people to call into Como. And, you know, your listeners, Steve, 6 months later now getting some inside baseball that haven't shared.
I have the tweet right here. That's a wrap. Proud Boys and other marchers say they will stay on the Capitol campus in Olympia for a few more hours to mingle and answer questions if anyone is interested in learning more about their cause and mission at Como News. That's it. That's all it takes to get canceled from ABC owned by Disney these days.
Yeah, and everything would have been fine. Like I said, see, that's where it's disappointing that my management caved. There were no issues whatsoever until the phone calls started. And again, that's how the far left operates. They're really sophisticated in many ways. And honestly, we saw with the whole Parler debacle, the right really needs to start getting on board with media and understanding technology. But the far left, they started, again, a very sophisticated online campaign with social media. And that's how they mobilize all the BLM protests, all the other rallies that they've done in the past to push their agenda and their cause. And, you know, what ended up happening was the allegation was, and get this, it wasn't my journalism or my facts that were off. It's that I wasn't harder on the Proud Boys, that I wasn't as critical as I should have been, according to some of these other far-left maniacs right out there.
Your politics wasn't their politics. Well, you know, their loss is my gain. I'm blessed to know you. I guess to be fair, they did say Como did not direct or approve Jonathan Cho's decision to cover this weekend's rally, nor did his work meet our editorial standards. We decided to end our employment relationship with him yesterday, the station said. Yeah, we're going to do great things together, and they can't even make good princess or superhero movies anymore. So to hell with them, right?
Well, look, that just corroborates and confirms everything that I just said. It wasn't my work. It wasn't my 20-plus years of experience. And in fact, none of the stuff even aired on their broadcast, but it was on social media. And I didn't make any type of slanderous claims or libel anybody. It was just too much heat. Let that sink in. And look, looking in hindsight, I'm glad it went down. You know, I wish I could have done some things differently, but I'm glad it went down. No regrets, because I'm now leaning into this. I'm realizing now, 6 months later, there is such an appetite and hunger for the truth. People who are expecting the local mainstream media to cover the issues like the homeless crisis, crime, what's actually happening, holding public officials accountable. But guess what? It's not happening at the scale that's needed to, again, help our democracy. So that's why I'm starting to realize this type of coverage, my journalism, my brand of journalism, is needed. And ultimately, the affirmation and confirmation that I need is by my followers, the people who DM me, the people who email me, the people who call me, the conversations I've had, the people have taken me out for meals just to thank me. And, you know, that's what keeps me going. And for me, at the end of the day, I'm not doing this for a paycheck. This really is a calling at this point. And frankly, no one else is doing this.
You're right.
We need more journalists and media members to go in there and tell these stories and spotlight what's happening.
And that's how this podcast came out of nowhere to become number two in the nation. And the newspaper has got fills a thirst that no one else is going to talk about. You're not going to hear it anywhere else. And I get the exact same thing. Letters to the editor saying, thank you so much. It's finally long overdue. Where you been all of our lives? Now, You are doing extremely dangerous and unique work with your video journalism. How do you go about it? Do you just dive into a situation and see how it plays out, or actually script it as best as you can?
Look, I really wish your listeners could see what I'm doing right now, and I'm holding up my iPhone. At the end of the day, this is the worst-kept secret, but the iPhone is one of the most powerful tools out there right now because it can record and take photos, and that's all I use along with some, you know, Final Cut video editing software. But, you know, before I go into a situation, yeah, there's a vetting process, right? And let's just use a homeless encampment, for example, in Seattle or 3rd and Pike, one of the most notorious drug dens and black markets in the city. I went in there and built relationships ahead of time. So I don't just go in there guns a-blazing. You know, I try to use some experience and wisdom of developing trust and relationships with the homeless or even some of the drug addicts and drug dealers and some of the people selling the stolen merchandise. And that's how I've been able to get this type of unprecedented access. You're not going to see this on air because this is not what's called brand safe, right? You know, a lot of these television stations and, you know, radio stations and so on and so forth, newspapers, you want to cover stuff that is appealing to advertisers because that's what fuels the paychecks at the end of the day. But my stuff is no longer brand safe. I'm just trying to show the truth, and that's how I go about telling these stories. I build relationships. I go in there. I assess the situation, and when it's time to go in, I go in. And it's also because I get approval from a lot of these folks who say, you know what, Cho, you're a cool dude. I know what your agenda is. And I show them my work. I show them my byline. I show them all of the work I've done in the past, and they're like, okay, we know you're going to do it fairly and accurately. And that's how, just again, I say this all the time now, the video don't lie. Look at my work. I'm not here to toot my own horn, Steve, but you know, we need more journalists who are willing to do this as well. That's my point. I'm hoping others get inspired and also see the need for this type of journalism and this type of spotlighting in our city, in our region. Otherwise, and I've said this a million times, it's almost like if you don't go and cover it, it's like it never happened. And if it never happened or it's not happening, then how do you hold your public officials accountable who can get away scot-free by saying, oh, yeah, my policies are working. And nothing to see here. Everything's fine.
It's no wonder Jay Inslee and Dow constantly don't like you. They're doing exactly what they don't want. Once upon a time, when there were only three networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, if it didn't happen on the nightly news, like you say, it didn't happen. But your citizen journalism, which you are the epitome of, makes a huge difference. Now, you've been called a fascist and a Nazi and a white supremacist of all things. Chased down the street by Antifa and harassed.
I'm Asian American, by the way, in case your audience can't see.
Yeah, you are of Asian descent. Your journalism is shining a light on the humanitarian crisis, not exactly a Nazi tactic. What do you say to those that are ignorant of what you were actually doing?
Look, anyone who knows me obviously knows those are ridiculous claims. Just for the record, I'm not a white supremacist, a neo-Nazi, or a fascist, okay? It's because, again, the far left, those are their tactics. When someone disagrees with their agenda or, you know, essentially calls them out, right, they don't like it. So what they do is they name call. What else has happened to me along this journey, which is insane, is I've been doxxed. And that basically means my personal information has been put out there. You know, these losers try to intimidate me, you know, putting out my home address, my phone number. I have all of that recorded, by the way. I have so many crank calls from people saying, Jonathan Cho, go die. And, you know, go back home. All this crazy stuff, you know, that.
Are we to assume they want you off the scene or dead so that the homeless crisis can continue at bay? Or why would they want you to think they don't like you for what?
Well, I can tell you right now, and obviously there's no one size fits all when it comes to the far left activism, but they share a lot of similarities. Number one, they hate the police, right? So they've been behind this failed social experiment called Defund the Police. That movement is totally gone. Okay. But again, what they do share in common, again, is when I'm spotlighting the truth, what's happening on the ground, they don't like it. I'll give you an example. You know, what's happening in Seattle right now is you have these homeless encampment sweeps that are happening. And all the homeless on site are offered housing or services, right? But the shelter and housing is not necessarily up to par with the standard. So they just move on to another campsite. So the far left activists will essentially say, you got to just leave the homeless there until they get this, a studio or an apartment in Seattle.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, guess what? I know people who are working three jobs who can't afford to live in Seattle, but they're just trying to survive and hold it down. So you're telling me somebody who has this attitude of entitlement gets to live in Seattle. It's a studio or an apartment for free. I mean, that is how far left some of these folks really, and they believe in this agenda.
Yeah.
And it's in America, by the way. I have to ask myself, is this America?
No, not Washington.
Yeah.
What is the Discovery Institute?
Well, Discovery Institute is long-time think tank based in Seattle. It's been around for decades, and they have multiple programs. They're considered conservative, right? A creationist think tank. But, you know, they have dozens of programs, and the program I'm under is the, again, Wealth and Poverty Program, and I'm right now leading the coverage on the fixhomelessness.org website. So I'm focused primarily on that. What is, you know, and what goes into the wealth and poverty beat? What goes into the homeless beat? So I'm covering everything from public policy to also the stories of the homeless, who rarely, if ever, have a voice on local news. You never hear the stories from the homeless, right? It's always usually, look at this neighbor or this business owner who has a problem, or look at this homeless encampment, another fire. Oh, there's another shooting. There's another murder. But there's more to this homeless crisis than just that. At the end of the day, we have to remind each other and ourselves and everyone listening that these are someone's fathers, mothers, children, sons, daughters, right? And what I don't really put out there, but again, I'll share on the show, is every time I go to these encampments, again, the relationship building is key. I get people's phone numbers. I follow up. You know, I take off my reporter hat and I try to get these men and women into housing. But the most frustrating and heartbreaking piece is that they don't want it in many cases. You ask why? It's because they want to do the drugs. Yeah. They want to do the drugs. They're addicted. And you know what? The criminals, the dealers are preying on them. Do you know how many luxury cars drive by some of these encampments in Seattle? Like straight up luxury cars with rims. You know, every stereotype. Just imagine. And you see the handoff. We know what's happening there.
Yeah, and the city wants to give the drugs for free to keep them hooked and keep them in the system.
And that's why this premise called Housing First is an absolute failure. Again, a lot of the Dems, the left, the progressives are pushing this agenda that if you give some type of stabilized housing to people, then everything, and again, this is the key, no strings attached, then everything will work itself out. But that doesn't work.
Well, here in Snohomish County, they bought two hotels, and they tried, one council member tried to get the law to say if you come into the hotel, you have to seek treatment, and it was overruled. And so now it's, like you say, no questions asked.
Exactly, and that's the problem. It's been like that for the past decade, and I don't get it because the what Discovery Institute has recently done is launched its own study, and what Discovery's fellows have found is that you've got to, housing is part of it, but you've got to require drug addiction treatment, mental health treatment. You have to require it.
Yeah.
Why is that so difficult? It makes absolutely no sense. Oh, and here's the other piece, getting back to the accountability. Okay, fine. Let's do housing first. Let's give away all this housing. Where are the numbers? What's the data? Nobody's talking about the data. Instead, the politicians and policymakers, they're just asking for more money. Yeah. We've thrown more than $1 billion at this.
Well, the data I always throw out is those two hotels cost $20 million and it's 190 beds. Do the math. That's more than my house. So, okay, how do you feel about the election we just had actually yesterday as we record this? And will Seattle or Washington see any positive change from the way you see that?
Short answer is probably not anytime soon, because we all know this is a deep blue state, and just based on the initial results, I think it's going to stay status quo right now. I think the and by the time your listeners listen to this, I don't know what's going to happen to the Larkin race. I know that was still too early to call, right?
Well, there's some statistics that say the late ballots counting could change things upwards of 10 to 13%, so our fingers are crossed, but we don't know. But no matter what, the city of Seattle council, 7 of 10 of them are up for re-election. They're a fiasco. The PD are down to under 1,000 with about 300 up for early retirement if they want it. Needs to be closer to 2,000 to be fully staffed. And the new laws of police can't chase and fentanyl decriminalized have caused unbelievable harm. You've seen it firsthand. You see it every day. You'll see it later tonight. I tell people in Tennessee, in law enforcement, this exact story, and they can't believe it's real. They say, no, that can't be true. But it is a reality show here in Seattle and King County and Snohomish County and Washington State. What have you, what were the ramifications that you've seen of the Defund the Police specifically, and of course the legalization of the hard drugs?
Well, just to be clear, possession of the legalization of hard drugs is kind of what's happened in Washington State in the past year and a half now. It was a decision essentially over a case where somebody argued that, hey, if I found, just a small baggie of fentanyl in my pocket, a pair of jeans I bought at a thrift store, I shouldn't be, held accountable for that. So they decided, hey, if it's small possessions of hard drugs, it's totally legal now in Washington State. Well, that's kind of led to a lot of unintended consequences because law enforcement now, they're essentially not arresting for this. And people are now using fentanyl, especially heroin, cocaine.
Now the number one killer of men 18 to 45 in the U.S., fentanyl is.
Meth, all of that in plain sight. Mm. And that whole, again, the ramifications, the unintended consequences of Defund the Police movement. And let me be very clear. Seattle did not defund a penny of the officer's budget. But this public pledge by the vast majority of the Seattle City Council, that left an impression. And that changed the culture. And that undermined what many SPD officers have said, their culture, their standing, and again, the importance of their work. And that's why so many are either retiring early, quitting, or it's virtually impossible now to recruit officers to the Seattle Police Department. Hence, you're down hundreds of officers. They can only respond to, quote unquote, these priority one calls, which means it's like a shooting or a murder. So everything else, including sexual assaults, rapes, are not being investigated right now because they don't have the bodies.
And the children, and they can't chase, and absolutely.
Let alone the drugs.
A lot of this is trickled down from British Columbia, as a matter of fact. They were sort of on the forefront of some of these laws you're talking about. Is the northern border as bad as we see now that it's reopened as like Yuma or Rio Grande? Not necessarily for humans walking across the border, but just to say drugs and trafficking coming down.
Yeah, look, short answer is yes. That needs more coverage as well. I haven't been able to get out there personally, but I was just recently at attending essentially a press conference virtually. The DEA, huge drug bust. And again, it's these Mexican cartels that are flooding the Pacific Northwest with these pills called blues or the fentanyl, right? Just a few years ago.
Now, right?
Yeah, the rainbow, allegedly. I have not yet to encounter that. But the kids now, and the way these kids are getting them now, and the DEA says these dealers are using social media and apps. I didn't have this stuff when I was growing up. Steve, you didn't either. But apparently through sites like Snapchat, right, the disappearing messages after a few minutes, they'll say, hey, you want some? You want this? You want that? And the kids are getting them, just essentially being cold called, essentially.
Yeah.
This is insanity.
Gang violence yesterday at Ingram High School with a shooting with an AK-47, of all things. Is it true California gives homeless one-way bus tickets to Portland and Seattle? Do you know that?
I've read some of the articles, the blogs, heard it anecdotally. I can't corroborate that. I haven't done any reporting on that, but I have no doubt it's happening in other states. I know in San Antonio, public officials have said openly, hey, if you're homeless and you want to leave, we will give you a bus ticket anywhere. So, of course, places like Portland and Seattle and, maybe even San Francisco, those places known, again, as more lax on the homeless crisis and especially illegal drug use, that, a lot of folks are being sent here.
It's not just that. There are magnets here that induce them that if they are in a bad way and homeless and looking for drugs, this is the place to come. What are those incentives?
Well, at least one incentive and a story I'm working on next is the whole harm reduction lobby. Right. Remember back in the day, it's all how you want to put, lipstick on a pig, basically. But needle exchange, there's no needle exchange happening. It's a one way, interaction, a transaction, basically. Basically, in King County, this is just King County, not even Pierce and Snohomish, and it's infiltrated those communities as well. But if I want needles, pipes, glass pipes to do drugs, I can get them almost anywhere for free. And in fact, I always carry Narcan now, which I got for free from King County because of the homeless beat I'm on. So many people overdose. every single day. Think about that. So I have to carry Narcan just in case. Thank God I have yet to use it. But people have overdosed just blocks from where I'm covering a story, and you hear the sirens of the ambulance. My God, who is tracking the number of calls, the resources being wasted on all these drug overdoses? Now, look, I want to be very clear. I'm all for reviving the men and women who are overdosing on the streets, but no one's talking about the strain and the drain on Seattle Fire and all these EMTs who are going out there on the front lines, not to mention the EMTs, but the firefighters who have put out, again, a record number of fires at homeless encampments.
Well, there was a story where an EMT actually gave mouth-to-mouth to somebody and ended up in the ER because fentanyl can have it can cause, what would you call that, residual damage to the next person who just comes in contact with it. So I know that grocery store carts are a fear. You just don't want to touch that stuff, and so it's good that you're carrying that. You know, obviously all of this leads to crimes, drugs, and prostitution go hand in hand. Do you think Inslee and Ferguson making Washington a sanctuary for abortion will do what they advertise and help women in distress or hurt Washington women who feel trapped into making the worst decisions of their lives?
You know, Steve, I got to be honest with you. That's one of those third rail topics that I have not covered, but personal opinion. We all know here in Washington, abortions are still legal. Will it protect women? I don't know. I don't know the data on all of that. I just know that when it comes to public safety, okay, this state just voted to keep the status quo. So, you know, I've seen already a lot of comments on my social media, people saying, okay, so I guess you want to ignore the homeless crisis and the record number of shootings in Seattle and so on and so forth and the down officers. So, look, I can't really, you know, I don't really have an educated or informed opinion on abortion right now in the state of Washington. So I'm going to defer.
I was thinking more like prostitution in the homeless center, because obviously they'll steal flip-flops and sell them for $10 to get their next hit, and so and there's sex and crime involved in this, and obviously the pimps that you say roll in with the rims, they're using these women to make money and stuff, and you know they will get pregnant, they will get an abortion. Seattle's all for that. If this was to happen in Oklahoma, it would be a little different story because the woman can't have the abortion in the morning and go back out on the street at night. So I'm just wondering if you're seeing that kind of human misery. Maybe it's too much of a topic, but it's been on my mind as to how these poor women who are homeless are being treated by the system that Inslee is perpetuating by saying it's easy to get an abortion.
Yeah, and I think that's you hit on a very inconvenient truth. Nobody's talking about those types of women, right? The sex workers, the women being exploited. Everyone's talking about women's choice and so on and so forth, but nobody's talking about that specific class of women. And frankly, I just have not done the reporting on that, and I don't see it elsewhere either, which goes back to my original point. Where's the mainstream media locally here in Seattle on this? Who's going to go in there and do these investigations, these deep dives? Who's going to develop relationships with these women to talk about that? Because you know what? Guess what? If that ever got out, if that story got out, I mean, that's a conversation that is not going to be really easy for the governor to have and to reconcile possibly with his policies, because there's no one size fits all. And what are you look, I can tell you this much. I think there should be some limits to abortion, regardless of where you stand on being pro-choice or pro-life. I mean, someone who just uses it as contraception.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen these women go on social media saying, hey, look, I've had 30 plus, you know, abortions. I'm going to do it again and again. I mean, that to me is a bit extreme.
Yeah, their libido is more important than their motherly instinct. There used to be a drugs to jail pipeline. Well, since we got bail issues here and there are guys who get arrested in the morning, come out at lunch, go back in the evening, go out by, you know, dawn. Have you seen a school to prison to homelessness pipeline for youth?
I've seen it. I've certainly seen cases in King County, but that's also why now the King County prosecutor, you know, is also trying to use more diversion programs. And I don't know where you guys all stand on the diversion programs, but I think there should be at least some form of it. But I think the criticism for these diversion programs is that, you know, even some of these violent, you know, kids who end up committing you know, heinous crimes are just given a slap on the wrist. So there really needs to be reform even within the diversion programs right now. But again, as we all know, this comes down to the overcrowding of jails and the prison system. It's broken, man, regardless of where you stand. And also the judges. This last election, out of all the King County judges, there were only two who ran opposed.
Yeah,
that's insane. Where are the judges? Because it's not just the prosecutors who aren't prosecuting necessarily, or the cops who can't arrest. It comes down to the judges, guys.
Yeah.
They're the ones who ultimately decide who gets bail, who doesn't, who gets a slap on the wrist, who gets released again.
And a big theme of this podcast has been prosecutorial discretion. We had a chance in Snohomish County for the first time in 20 years for a Republican, at least somebody who ran as a Republican, to take the seat of county prosecutor. He lost. He lost soundly. It's status quo. The jails are already at about 50% capacity. Are they just adding to themselves on the streets?
I mean, are you asking whether or not they're being released?
Well, they're not going home to their family and, you know, for Thanksgiving and everybody's, you know, Ozzie and Harriet. They're going somewhere. They're maybe getting on a bus and heading to, like you said, to San Francisco. But are the majority of those that are not meeting that 50% that's out of prison, are they just on the streets? Are you running into them day in and day out?
Yeah, look, I talk to my law enforcement friends who say they're so frustrated because not only is there overcrowding in the jails, they feel like they can't, I mean, even if they did make an arrest for, again, depends on the types of cases, right? But shoplifting, for example, or even, you know, drug use on the streets, it really depends on the crime. But a lot of these that used to be serious, now not deemed as serious, those men and women are just being released back on the streets. And that's one of the greatest frustrations. I don't know what the exact data is, but I can just tell you what I know based on my sources and what I've seen personally. Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt that there are people who are ending up, who should have been in jail or prison, who are now on the streets.
Or mental health institutions.
Yeah.
Well, how about the businesses in downtown? I mean, they put up with this for years now. Do you see anyone fighting for their rights to operate safely, or is it just getting worse? And of course, we just ended, except for COVID, the Seattle has a very large, reliant industry of the cruise ships. Who would want to get off a cruise ship and wander around downtown Seattle, Belltown, and the financial district with all of this that you're describing? It sounds like prison.
Yeah. Well, look, just in the past, I'd say a few weeks, things have improved in the downtown core because of the commitment by Mayor Bruce Harrell to really, you know, do something about it. And that's essentially in some of these problem hotspots. He's just simply adding more police officers. So that presence, regardless of what, you know, these activists, anti-police activists will say, the presence of police makes a difference to a certain degree, especially when they're active patrols on bikes or, you know, flashing lights and so on and so forth. And there is a concerted effort to focus again on the downtown core, because as you said, it's the center of not only business, but the tourism that's vital to the city and all the small businesses that need to, you know, stay open or are trying to stay in the city. And not only the small ones, but there's actually quite a few tech companies now that have offices in the downtown core who have, you know, complained to the mayor about some of these issues. But again, what's happening is with this, you know, focus on the downtown core, you're now seeing some of these problems like the homeless crisis being pushed to other neighborhoods in Seattle. So it's like this vicious cycle, right? You want to protect and put the moat around the downtown area and the core, and you'll quickly go in and, you know, sweep out the camps that pop up, or, you know, you'll just move the dealers and the drug users along, but they all have to go back somewhere. So the other area they're going now is the Chinatown International District, which is just a 5-minute bus ride away. So that community, again, getting ravaged.
Traditionally very safe neighborhood. They raise their families quite well, so this is an infringement upon them and their culture. Now, I'm here with Jonathan Cho, the Discovery Institute. City Councilwoman Herbold used the police personally to remove an RV in front of her house, and I think someone threw a rock through her window and got arrested, and Councilwoman Sawant, who survived a recall, somehow got special police protection because someone threw poop at her house. These two were behind the whole defund the police movement but demanded special police protection.
Yeah, just to be clear, did Sawant actually get the police I don't think she actually got it. She was demanding it.
They arrested the person. They investigated, figured out who it was, and that's the last news I heard.
Right, but I don't think she got special treatment or patrols. I think that's what she was asking for, right?
Well, if someone did it to your house, would they come out and look and find the person and right away take care of it?
Okay,
or would
that's
they,
what you mean by special patrols.
Yeah, I mean,
but
we got 45-minute delays for 911 calls. That's special, in my opinion.
Right,
but
well,
they were the ones behind it. So I'm talking about the hypocrisy and the two forms of serve and protect in Seattle,
sure.
Right? You've seen that.
Yeah, and we've seen that also with Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, right, who unfortunately had just this maniac show up to her home this past summer and, you know, yell threatening words, racist words, go back to India and all of that. I mean, look, that's uncalled for regardless of where you stand on the spectrum of politics. But, yeah, I think Seattle PD was also, you know, many officers, rather, not necessarily just the agency, but the officers were saying that's the hypocrisy here, right? You know, Pramila Jayapal was at the forefront of this whole defund the police movement, where she likes to now kind of qualify by saying, oh, I just wanted to divert some of the money to other, you know, programs.
All of it. Half of it.
Yeah, but then now these, you know, at the end of the day, we all know, right? If there's a crime or a threat against them, they're now demanding patrols and special treatment. But guess what? At the end of the day, they're public servants.
She's the one that used her key to open City Hall to demand the sit-in.
So
ended up becoming
become
the chop chaz that we all heard about with the rapes and the gun exchanges and the murder and all the rest. And I had people who owned commercial real estate there, and their renters were basically hostages for a week upstairs. But I want to ask you this too, and we're running out of little time, so I want to try to get
through. We're ready.
Yeah, it goes fast. I mentioned the police are under 1,000 here, and it's actually 800, and 300 are eligible for retirement next month. So if half of them, and likely more because morale's so low, what will a city of 750,000 do with only 700 or so cops? And what is your relationship with the cops when you go out at night?
I think I will say on the record now, I'm 100% behind SPD. Look, if there's ever a bad cop who makes a mistake or, you know, just does something stupid, they should be held accountable. And I think most of SPD will stand by what I just said. My relationship with SPD is I think they're great. I think we need more men and women to go into law enforcement, and we've got to do whatever it takes to keep the ones who have decided to, you know, stay to protect and serve the community. And they should be acknowledged along the way. So, that's kind of my short answer in terms of the lack of manpower. Look, I think we're going to still see all these ongoing issues and problems. It's not going to suddenly go away overnight.
And the solution of new academies closer to where people live is going to take 10, 20 years to get these rookies up and running. So it's a joke. But do you agree with me that the council, their goal was basically to take the largest budget item in the city, law enforcement, and move the line items to social services regardless of the consequences?
Yeah, and this council clearly just goes with the direction the wind is blowing, and you alluded to that. Several council seats are now up for grabs, so we're going to see next year. And what's really interesting is quite a few of the, or I won't say quite a few, but at least two to three council members who pledged to defund SPD are now trying to align themselves with Mayor Harrell. Because Mayor Harrell is 100% for adding more officers. So you can just tell right now that some of these council members are trying to get reelected and will say whatever and even go against their initial pledge to defund the police by now saying, oh, yeah, you know, in second thought, you know, maybe we should do our best to bring in more officers. So I find that
voting records don't lie, but they sure do.
The hypocrisy is so thick.
Now, and Herbal publicly said, it's on video, she would fire police based on race, white, and which also happens to be the ones that had the longest tenure. That's going to be a hard record to run from if she says that she's now pro-police or pro-law enforcement.
Yeah, well, guess what, Steve? Who's going to hold her accountable? Will the local mainstream media come election time actually pull back that tape and play it again and ask her and confront her? We'll see. I've tried.
I'll play
to.
It on this show, but
okay.
You know,
you know,
only,
I've confronted Herbold multiple times, and yeah. I don't think I'm going to be on her Christmas list.
So, but in Snohomish County now, and it's not all Seattle all the time in Washington State, although they do run the show. The Snohomish County Sheriff, he survived a recall. He won re-election. Adam Fortney. He said, "People don't know." Right? Fortney said when discussing his residents' reaction to the laws listed previously, the first thing I do is pick their jaw up off the floor. They cannot believe we can't chase cars in the state of Washington to a certain extent. But do you know who does this? The criminals. One recently called 911 to report he was being chased in a stolen car by police. It's Mad Max around here.
Yeah, it's a free-for-all. And that's what's so frustrating, I think, for a lot of not only residents, neighbors, and the good people of Snohomish County, Pierce, King, and just the state of Washington, is that you have these law enforcement officers now. They just feel like, again, their hands are tied because these laws that were passed by these, you know, lawmakers who really are out of touch with reality decided to go with, quote unquote, the woke agenda. And now look what's happening, where you have agencies who are afraid to chase because they want to make sure that they're not breaking the laws themselves and they won't be unfairly held accountable by the woke mob.
And they have to call a supervisor before they can chase. And by that time, that guy is off I-5 down to SeaTac. So, okay, what are your priorities as a journalist going forward? We just had an election. Nothing's going to change. It's the same people back for more. It's a 105-day session, so even if they get some resolutions, it's going to take a decade to fix. And do you see solutions in the people you cover?
Look, at the end of the day, I don't care who gets elected or not. I have my own personal, you know, views and values, but I'm here to hold everyone accountable objectively, fairly and accurately, whether you're Republican or Democrat, independent, whatever, libertarian. I don't care. I'm going to keep on doing my job, that shine a light. And I always like to say the video don't lie. And again, I think the reason why I've developed a following now is not only because I'm covering the stories that the mainstream local media is refusing to cover for various reasons, is I drive all my narratives with video. And these compelling images showing the raw reality on the ground, the politicians can't escape from that either.
No.
So I'm going to keep on
doing
that.
And the look on Dal Constantine's face was priceless. I mean, I'm going to
keep on doing that, Steve, and you know, who, regardless of who's in office, who's in power, and I'm going to ask the tough questions.
Very depressing beat sometimes. I mean, to see the misery so often and hopelessness. How do you do it? You have kids.
Yeah. Well, I do it for my kids, too, for their future as well, because, you know, regardless of where we end up living, I mean, Washington now is my home. I'm a Boston kid, but I don't have any plans to go back to the East Coast anytime soon. And, you know, we love it here. So if this is going to be my home, I want to be a good steward of that as well. And I'm just doing my part. Look, I'm not here to play hero. I'm not saying I have all the solutions. I'm just playing my role in the media. Okay, and my job is, again, to, you know, hold public officials accountable and cover my community fairly and accurately. We just need more people to do that.
I think that's what it says in the dictionary under journalists, so that's great. Obviously, homelessness is not just a Seattle crisis. It's a national and truly global problem. Are you planning on any out-of-state or out-of-country reporting?
Yeah, you know, again, being a senior fellow, I have more flexibility to cover the homeless crisis, not only here in Washington State, but nationally as well. I just got back from Washington, D.C. I covered the crisis in Boston. I'm heading to Portland next week. That's a hot mess out there as well, and I'll be going to L.A. and San Fran. So, look, Steve, I'm just getting started. So, you know, all I ask is that, you know, the viewers and listeners just continue to, you know, consume my content and follow me and support me, and I'll do what I can, do my part.
Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. We are at the end here, but please tell our listeners where they can go to find you and more and follow you.
Yeah, so again, I'm a senior fellow and journalist at Discovery Institute. My work's going to be on fixhomelessness.org. Again, it's on fixhomelessness.org, but a lot of my engagement, the back and forth I have with folks out there will be on Twitter at Choshow, C-H-O-E-S-H-O-W.
All right. Let's hope that Elon Musk doesn't get a bone to pick with you and decide to take you off of there, too. But thanks again for coming on with us, and good luck tonight back on the beat.
I will. Take care.
This pawn shop ticket for this week's rent. Well, last week's check is already spent.
Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard and anything else on my mind. Steve, Jonathan Cho is still sitting right here, so be on your best behavior, but what did you think of his journalism?
Well, a couple of things. He brought up the great resignation of different journalists leaving their posts, and I thought that was very interesting. I'll have to do a little more research. But, you know, when we're talking about crime, I love watching old crime dramas from the 70s and the 80s, Starsky and Hutch, Cannon, all these kind of things. And a lot of the crime dramas were based on going out and getting petty theft. And criminals, and you got a bag of dope, you're arrested. Movies based around that. And now you can't make a TV show, you can't make a movie around crime because it's all being decriminalized. And it reminds me of in the 70s, quite frankly, the crime rates were massive. New York, Seattle. In the 80s, they came in, they cleaned everything up. And now it's like we've reverted backwards. And it would be a whole tale in of itself. Maybe John could do a whole history of why did we go from 70s crime, seedy state, seedy city, 80s, things got cleaned up, and then now we're right back to that time.
Yep. And you just described New York City, Chicago, Miami, a whole bunch of places that decided that they wanted to go back to the future and act like they were in the 70s. But
yep.
Moving on, I wanted to read a little something to you and then play a few clips so people can understand where I'm coming from. This is in Truth Press, and it was just before the election. Biden says coal plants all across America will be shut down and replaced. President Biden said Friday that coal plants are too expensive to operate and we're going to be shutting these plants down all across America. Please play clip number one.
How to bring economic opportunity using clean, renewable energy as the key into coal country. Because we're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business. Right, Tim? And we're going to make it clear that we don't want to forget those people.
Okay, that was the dearly departed Hillary Clinton, who lost, by the way, the 2016, making the pitch that we were going to close down coal mines and put coal miners out of business. Well, here we are on the eve of an election, and Joe Biden says the exact same thing. Let's hear it from his own words. Please play clip number two.
I was in Massachusetts about a month ago on the site of the largest old coal plant in America. Guess what? It costs them too much money. They can't count. No one's building new coal plants because they can't rely on it, even if they have all the coal guaranteed for the rest of the existence of the plant. So it's going to become a wind generation. And all they're doing is you're going to save them a hell of a lot of money and using the same transmission line that transmitted the coal-fired electric on. We're going to be shutting these plants down all across America.
Okay. So losing issue for Hillary. Opponent, I guess, thinking it's a winning issue for Joe, if you can understand his murmuring and whatever. Biden's comments prompted a response from a Twitter account run by the Republican National Committee, which said Joe Biden celebrates coal plant workers losing their jobs. So last night, J.D. Vance in Ohio, he wins. I have a concern, or at least think that they are very concerned about energy business and jobs there. But, Steve, how does John Fetterman win in Pennsylvania?
I'm not sure.
Well,
I can you see a theme here? Close down the coal, bring in the clean energy, close down the coal, bring in the energy, and what is the WHO and all the WEF and all these guys saying? The same thing. They're all playing on the same playbook.
Yeah, but unfortunately we have Hillary Clinton turned out of office for that reason, Joe Biden currently in office, Pennsylvania Senator maybe wins on this issue. We know the other guy probably wouldn't have been for that. Let's play the last clip and hopefully my point is made.
They don't want Hillary Clinton's welfare or Sanders' welfare. They want jobs. And they have destroyed the lives of these people who I know by name. These are very evil people. But all Americans should wake up to this because they're destroying 4 cents a kilowatt hour electricity and substituting wind and solar at 26 cents. And it's going to affect every family in this country, including you ladies out there that are trying to make ends meet this morning. Hillary Clinton will continue Obama's policies. She is evil. She is destructive.
Right. So that was 2016. That was response to Hillary, who lost. Fetterman, can we just admit it? There's no way he won this election last night.
No.
Okay. Well, that's it for this episode. No, it's not.
I don't understand how you ever did without me.
Welcome to our Thought of the Week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere really now and hit the subscribe button. And thanks for doing it. I just don't think a coaching career can be complete without an undisputed national championship. You need to at least one. When you win them all, your team is recognized unanimously as the best in the nation. It took 17 years to do it, but we finally had one. That was on winning the 1980 national championship and his career, Dooley, my 40 years at Georgia, Vince Dooley. He also said, my base salary was $12,000, but I had a TV contract of $100 a show on a one-year trial for 10 shows. So it wasn't just the base salary. Every time that the salary surveys came out in the newspaper, I have to hide it from my wife, Barbara, because she gets mad every time she sees what everyone's making. She says, go back for 1 year and get fired. Then you'll be set for life. On how his first year salary at Georgia compared to college football coaching salaries in the modern era. Vince Dooley, the winningest football coach and longtime athletic director at the University of Georgia. Dooley, who was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1994, died at his Athens home surrounded by his wife Barbara and their four children. Can't ask for a better way to go than that. During Dooley's 25-year stint on the Georgia sidelines from 1964 to 1988, the Bulldogs won 201 games, claimed six SEC titles, and were voted national champions in 1980. He continued to serve as Georgia's AD until 2004. He is the fourth winningest football coach in SEC history, trailing only former Alabama, Texas A&M, and Kentucky coach Bear Bryant, former Florida and South Carolina coach Steve Spurrier, and former LSU and current Alabama coach Nick Saban. Legendary Georgia football coach Dooley died last month at the age of 90. 1980 national championship, six SEC championships, winning as football coach in Georgia history, produced the great Herschel Walker, good luck tomorrow, one of the all-time greats. Thank you for the memories, and God rest his soul. And as you know, number one Georgia played number two Tennessee last weekend. Congratulations, Bulldogs. Well, that is the end of this episode. I really hope you liked it. Write to me at millcreekview@yahoo.com, and I just might read it on the air. Thank you, Jonathan Cho. Godspeed on your journey, Jonathan. It's crazy out there. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the millcreekviewonline.com. Stay tuned for a bonus segment with me and Ohio Brett, and I'm still asking because it hasn't come yet. Peace in our time.
Nashville with John Jubilee and Energize Health 88. And what a great story that is. And that's a big part of what we need to do as athletes is get our mind, our body, and our soul right. And so it was an honor to meet you there. And I'm going to let you tell the story, but what an amazing story that was, you know, making a difference north of Seattle and now in your transition to Tennessee. And I can't wait for you to share the true story of the Mill Creek View podcast, Tennessee.
Absolutely right. And John Jubilee was a guest just last week. Last night I had FBI Special Agent Stephen Friend on, who is a whistleblower and was suspended for not wanting to go in on the January 6th raid. So had the pleasure, absolute pleasure of some amazing guests. They make me look good. I'm not that smart. I just ask questions. Socratic method. But I've had about 35 episodes now of people who love truth, people who are making a difference, people who have an impact in our society. And it's been a blessing. And so I met you in a little VRBO there in Nashville with John Jubilee. And man, you're looking thinner every time I see you. I don't know. You're going to have to get married or something, put on that cuddly 20 again or something like that, or back to college. But
you know, it is what it is, because the big guy in the sky doesn't lie. And what you put in your mouth truly makes a difference.
Absolutely. What goes in doesn't come out if it's protein and it's done well. So yes, John showed us both the light, and I actually was found by the Lord himself on the 88-day protocol. So my baptism came after my transformation from John Jubilee. So I know this isn't an ad for him or anything, but he was on my podcast. We had a great 45-minute discussion about healthcare, the state of American diet, long life, and the joy of his life and his rags to riches story.
Absolutely. Well, I love it. Well, Steve, you know, our audience here, we tug on that sports background. So I've asked all the players in the locker room to take a knee, or have a seat. We're already stretched. We got our ankles taped. We have our football helmets by our side, and we get to share some time with you, Steve, because one of the things that I saw going to all 50 states in 12 months and was so blessed to recently complete that journey in Hawaii, and boy, is that Aloha spirit great in Hawaii. There's some true amazing leaders out there, and I can't wait to go back out. They're bringing us back out. We're going to do an amazing week. Ohio Brett and Dr. Judy Mikovits will be making a difference out in Maui, Oahu, and Kauai. But I saw women everywhere, Steve. And that question just kept coming back because I was the knucklehead who drove 47 of the 50 states. And just driving around, I saw women everywhere. Where are the men? Where are the real men?
Well, they're not in Washington State, I'll tell you that. I'm here right now because of the election last night, and to see some amazing candidates that I worked with for some over 2 years to try to get to last night, and someone like Tiffany Smiley, right? A woman, amazing story, nursed her blind husband to health, got him to be the first reinstated Army person. Did I lose you guys, or am I still here?
We're good.
Okay, good. So anyway, amazing. Where are the men? They all got blown out, 60-40. Washington is not the testosterone capital of the world, that's for darn sure. In Ohio, though, you're lucky. You got the new J.D. Vance there, and my podcast advertises in the Ohio Star. I don't know if anyone clicks the banner ad and wants to hear from these folks. You'll see they exist, but the electorate sure doesn't care about that. I don't know. The party of women on the left came along a long time, and you know, you remember the pussy hat guys? I don't know if you can say that word on the air, that cat hat guys.
Right.
There's a lot more of them that vote than the ones you're talking about. Herschel Walker, good luck, man. I hope you pull it out. He's a stud.
Well, you know what? He is a stud. But I'll tell you right now, there are some abominations in our midst, and there are rhinos. And Ohio Brett is proud to be from Ohio. I love all 88 counties in Ohio. And we have an abomination as a leader there with Governor DeWine and what he did.
But you know, your Jim Jordan, if he gets on to the committee that matters the most, judiciary, he can actually do some work. And McCarthy, who's from California, probably kind of squishy, he's going to have to listen to him. So you have a chance. Ohio has a chance to lead the nation back to God, back to where it needs to be, back to a country we can actually say, God bless America, and feel good about it. Because right now, with what we've been through for the last 2 years or 4 years, it's hard to say that and really believe it because it's been rough.
I believe that I'm not looking to any politician as a savior. I'm looking to my Heavenly Father and my personal relationship with Yeshua, Jesus Christ, and what he did on that cross for all of us.
Amen.
God loves the world. You guys need to dust off and go read Ezekiel 9 about crying out against the abominations in our midst. It's up to us, and it's up to great leaders like Steve. And everything that you're sharing with the Mill Creek View Podcast Tennessee, right now, it's up to us, neighbor to neighbor, to get that truth out. For those of us who truly love our teammates, black or white, Asian, Hispanic, Native, Indian, we can truly unite because we've all been lied to. The author of confusion has been around, Steve, for a long, long time. And we're embarking out on that journey in year two to all 50 states again.
Yeah.
And I look forward to looking you up because I'm going to bring you on stage because one of the things that we're going to be doing in all 50 states is where are the real men events?
I like it.
Where are the real men events? And I don't care whether the local guys choose a breakfast, a lunch, or a dinner. We're going to show up 20, 40, 60, 80 guys, whatever it is. Please tell me there's a few good studs in Nashville.
I'll show you where all the bodies
Biloxi,
are buried.
Mississippi.
Bet. You bet.
And we can have the real conversations, and we're not looking to politicians, and we're not looking to CEOs, and we're not looking to weasel governors. That doesn't even make a difference of how we can show that truth with our neighbor. And we'll have some real conversations on what a real man does, what a real man looks like.
Well, let me just tell you, Brett, the exit polls showed, and it's really important, is that where the Republicans, and you're right, you can't put faith in any idols, right? It's the youth. The youth went dramatically for the left in this overnight. There's going to be some changes over the next coming days as they count the absentee ballots and whatnot and the mail-in ballots. But the youth are the ones that really need to get the message that you're talking about because they're not getting that message. The culture is giving them the wrong message. And if we're going to save the future, bring more people to God, open more eyes, The youth have to get on board.
I love that, Steve. Bam, man. I want to go do 10 push-ups and do some power jacks. But that's the truth. Yeah, and you wouldn't know this, but one of the projects we're involved in is that we're bringing a concert business to America through the high school booster groups, because we can't give up on these public high schools or the public universities. No. And I know that your statue is still there in USC out west. And I got to go dust off my statue at the University of Toledo. Yes, they've been infiltrated by Lucifer-led evil, but Lucifer-led evil has infiltrated everywhere.
He's the master
of lies. So we can't give up on them, but we have to go and we have to get dirty. And when I say get dirty, I mean build relationships. That takes effort and energy. You got to put effort in to build relationships with the youth. And one of the things a concert experience can bring us is everybody can come together.
Yeah.
And at that beautiful concert experience, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 musical acts, we're going to feature local talent. But in between musical acts, Steve, we can guide them to some truth that they've never heard of, because CNN isn't showing it. Fox News isn't showing it. The Republicans aren't sharing it. The Democrats aren't sharing it.
The Mill Creek View podcast is.
Your podcast is.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited to guide people. Let's go up, pull up that link there for the Mill Creek View Podcast Tennessee. And Steve, I'm so excited that you're embarking on this journey. You're going to make a huge difference one podcast at a time.
Doing the best I can, brother.
That's what it's all about, because family matters. And many people actually still love this great republic called the United States of America.
The silent mega majority, no question about it. It's not one man, it's not Trump, it's not Steve, it's not Brett. It is for the glory of God. And we are a blessed country. We just have to do what we're expected to do, right? Obey, do it right. It's so simple. Just don't.
And that's what I love, is that big game plan. Nick Saban brought the most beautiful defensive game plan. He's a defensive genius. And it was thicker than the Bible, his game plan. But got us prepared for defense. But for us that walk out there, that B-I-B-L-E, I truly believe, Steve, a verse a day will show you the way. And I have a great, great team that when I meet people on this journey called life, and if someone's open to receiving a Bible, I don't just go give Bibles out. They'll throw it away, but you have to get effort and energy and ask, if I do get you a Bible, this team gets you a Bible, would you start with a verse a day? And some people say no, and you just dust your feet off and move on.
Men don't know that God loves them. They've never been told that growing up, most of them, and they just need to hear that, because it's true every day, every minute. It's every breath they take. They just need to know it.
Well, Steve, I can't appreciate you enough. Thank you for coming into the locker room with Ohio Brett and our national audience here on Brighteon.tv, the fastest growing streaming network in the world. And I'll tell you what, Steve, if your USC wins out, I believe they're going to get in the Final Four. And who knows, they may get a chance to play the Ohio State Buckeyes.
But we are joining you guys next season, or is it the season after? One of these seasons, we're going to be rivals.
Well, coming to the Big Ten, I got my thoughts on that. I'm kind of like in Bill Walton's corner. I'm not a big fan of it. I think that USC and UCLA should stay put and do a great job in the League of Champions. The Conference of Champions. I love what Bill Walton.
I just think the cat's out of the bag. It's too late. The $8 billion revenue for ads, it's already been spent.
Chasing money, and what scripture tell you about that?
Don't do it.
All right. Hey, God bless you, Steve. We'll see you soon.
Talk to you soon, buddy.
Thanks.
At the county fair, yeah, we're looking for America.